I want to welcome back my buddy, our pal, Jim Cameron, who writes about all things transportation for his weekly column in CT Mirror called Talking Transportation. And interestingly enough, this week, Jim was talking about something that was not technically here in Connecticut. Hey, Jim, how are you?
I'm fine, Melissa.
You were talking about the Long Island Railroad strike, even though it didn't technically impact Connecticut. Why?
Well, a good question. I expected to hear that question asked by my editors as well, too. But I think they got it. The reason I was writing about a strike that didn't directly affect us, the Long Island Railroad strike that was over after 3 days, is really like a dry run for if we should ever have a similar strike against Metro North.
Oh, that's a good point.
We should learn from other people's pain. And I was watching the Long Island Railroad shut down and the effect on 320,000 daily commuters with a great deal of interest, because I think they handled the strike fairly well, because a lot of people on Monday just said, okay, I'm just going to work from home. But if that strike had dragged on as long as previous strikes had for, you know, weeks, the economic impact, I think, was measured like something like $60 million a day in lost business and interruption to the New York metropolitan area economy.
That's a really good point. So who would you say won on this new contract?
Well, that remains to be seen. I mean, the discussion was more about wages than work rules. And each of the unions is going to have to ratify this. So we don't know the details yet of what the MTA settled on. But one of the problems was there wasn't a great deal of sympathy for the striking union workers, because they're the highest paid railroad employees in the country.
Really?
I mean, there are locomotive engineers there who are pulling down $160,000 a year. Most of it because of heavy overtime. Some of these men and women are working, you know, 60, 70 hour weeks, but they're certainly pulling down the coin. So they were trying to say, you know, look, we just want a wage increase that'll keep us up with inflation. But as I saw somebody post on social media, he said, dude, you're driving a BMW and you live in Garden City and you make $200,000 a year. What are you talking about keeping up with inflation?
But they are living in one of the more expensive parts of the country. Do you think that matters, or no, that's still very kind of out of touch?
I think they are far better off than most of the customers that they are taking on those trains on a daily basis. So.
Okay.
You know, most of the people that take Metro North or the Long Island Railroad are not making that kind of money. And neither were they getting, you know, 3.5% retroactive pay increases for the last 3 years, as it appears the union workers at Long Island Railroad did. Now, this is not an easy job. There are years of work that go into becoming an engineer or a conductor. There's a great deal of responsibility. You're driving, you know, hundreds and hundreds of people on, in some cases, you know, 100-year-old railroad tracks and catenary overhead wires. So there's a lot of responsibility, and I don't think we should, you know, treat the job lightly. But they do make awfully good money. And one of the problems, that the reason they're making so much money and all this overtime, is the railroads in general and MTA, Metro North, Long Island Railroad in specific, are having a lot of trouble recruiting new people to take those jobs.
Yeah, that's interesting.
Because there are years of work involved. You have to almost be constantly on call. You can't have any kind of a family life. The railroad can snap its fingers and say, okay, we need you on a train in, you know, X number of hours. And assuming you've had enough sleep from the night before, you got to show up and you got to do that job. So it's not an easy job. And young people, I think, who look at it and go, money's good, but man, I want a little more flexibility in my life.
Right. Well, I mean, but then that kind of brings it back then, Jim, to the question of, are these workers underpaid? Now, maybe not specifically the LIRR, but in general, I mean, if that's sort of the role that they play, which is you're married to your job, essentially, and it's not an easy job to do. If you look at other parts of the country, and again, that's a bigger conversation, but it does make you sort of question, you know, if these are the highest paid in this industry and they're not happy, I'm wondering if those conditions are kind of the same or at least similar and people are making much less. Like if you look at Metro North, for example, I don't know.
Well, I think if you look at the freight railroads that cover most of this country, those people are not living in the high expense areas like the metropolitan New York area. Mm. So they may be making less money, but I think this is a serious problem for the industry overall.
Yeah.
Just to flip back on the other side as well too. I mean, talk about management. One of the things that they were talking about for the longest time was, you know, more productivity because they have some crazy work rules. If the union engineer drives an electric train in the morning and then has to drive a diesel train in the afternoon, they make an extra day's pay. Really?
Wait, why?
What's with this? You know,
that's
if the conductor gets dispatched, they do. It's true. It's true.
Is and it harder to operate one type of train than the other?
No.
Okay.
No, but these are all work rules that have been previously negotiated and agreed to by management and by the union. So every time they reopen these contracts, they go back and they say, well, this doesn't make sense. Why is a conductor making a penalty fee because he was scheduled to be on track 12 and suddenly his train is going to be on track 15? They make extra money for walking those few, tracks over.
Man, if I could do that, every time I have to change a different studio, can I get a pay raise? That's crazy.
Yeah.
Because that's what it is.
Well,
I'm sorry, but because here's the thing. I don't know how this industry works. I've never worked at a railroad. But if that's what it is, just changing tracks, I mean, man, I think everybody would love to know if they change office spaces that they would get, bump and pay.
Yeah.
That's crazy.
Nice work if you can get it. And
right?
It's available if
Holy
you really want
cow.
It. But again, just to circle back to your original question, why was I writing about the Long Island Railroad strike? It's because I think if we had a similar strike in Connecticut, there's no way we would handle it as well as the LIRR conductors and commuters did early this week on Monday before they reached a settlement.
Yeah.
Just the geography and a lot of, the economics of people in Connecticut are different than those on Long Island.
Jim Cameron is here from Talking Transportation, his weekly column in CT Mirror. And recently he wrote a column regarding the settlement for the Long Island Railroad. As you know, they had a strike and it is now at least settled. We don't know exactly what that contract looks like. But what exactly did Connecticut learn from this? Because let's face it, we've got Metro North. But first, Jim, I wanted to know, how did 325,000 commuters that use that rail system handle that commute Monday?
Well, most of them stayed home. The MTA was providing buses that were going to be able to carry a maximum, I think it was 13,000 passengers from distant stations. You could go and you could park at your old train station and hop a free bus, and it would take you into the city far enough and then dump you onto the subway, and then you could find your way to work if you really had to. They were ready to take maybe 13,000 commuters on the first day. I think 1,100 or 1,200 showed up. So people weren't even taking advantage of what the MTA was offering in terms of backup service. Most of them, as I say, probably stayed home, or they had anticipated this, or they worked from home. But, as the strike wore on, I think you'd probably have more bosses saying, you got to show up, Harry. I don't care if you're sleeping on your brother-in-law's couch in Queens, but get your, into the office and sit at that desk and be productive. But fortunately, the strike only lasted one day. It's also the geography of Long Island. I mean, there was a lot of traffic. I was watching my Google Map traffic reports first thing in the morning, wondering, how red were the highways going to be. But you have at least three major east-west roads. The Northern State, the Long Island Expressway, the Southern State Parkway. In Connecticut, if we had a strike, we only have the Merritt and we have I-95. And
yep.
I just listened to your traffic report, and even without a strike or any other, unusual delays, it's the usual bumper-to-bumper situation out there on I-95.
Yeah.
Good morning, everybody, driving on I-95. This is about what you're used to on a good day. Imagine what it would be like if the hundreds of thousands of Metro North commuters were facing a strike and they were out there trying to compete for pavement as well, too.
Well, it's funny because you actually address that in your article, Jim. There's a part in your column where it says, quote, Connecticut has spent decades building an economy dependent on Manhattan while never creating a realistic backup plan for losing the railroad. So, I mean, when you talk about could we even handle a strike today if we had to shut down our trains? No.
No, I don't think we could. I mean, we would cope. We would do the best we can.
Probably work from home.
I mean, how would the DOT operate? Are they going to put, you know, buses out there on I-95 as well, too? So, we have very limited alternatives to this railroad. And as I wrote, the economy of this state, the reason people live here and enjoy the quality of life that we have on, the coastal communities and in Fairfield County is because there's a train that'll get dad or mom to their job in New York City and get them home safely at the end of the day. The economics of where to live and how affordable it is change a lot if you can't get that kind of reliable transportation.
Well, and it's interesting because I don't know when the last time Metro North had a strike, but I am curious kind of when you see what happened, right here in Long Island, what are the chances of Metro North having a strike again and how when's the last time we had one?
1983.
Okay,
little
so
before
it's been
my
a bit.
Time living up here.
Okay.
It went on for 6 weeks.
Holy
six
cow.
Weeks. And
oh
there
my gosh.
There were, maybe 90,000 daily commuters that were affected. But they did not have alternatives. They tried to throw together busing alternatives as well, too. And, it just didn't work. It was just not adequate alternative capacity on the highways to get people to their jobs. And the other question is, what would happen if there was a strike on Metro North in Connecticut? How would that affect Amtrak? If you were hoping to catch Acela and go down for a business trip in Washington during the day, would Amtrak be affected as well, too? Because, if they throw up a picket line, there's always a risk that other unions are going to say, nope, not crossing that line. I don't care what my contract says, but I'm going to, stay with the brotherhood here.
Yeah. So what would you say would be the economic and even social effect in Connecticut if we saw a strike again? First of all, I don't know the likelihood, Jim, of a strike happening. Like, I don't know how happy Metro North workers are. Maybe you have a gauge on that.
Well, again, circling back to your original question, why am I writing about a strike on Long Island? Because the precedent that has been set by the settlement of this contract will probably be the template that is used for all the other contracts that are going to be negotiated by Metro North MTA with its various unions. They've got, I think, 83 different bargaining units they have to negotiate with. And the way they do that is they usually will do the big ones first. So they settle with the major unions that represent most of their employees at the Long Island Railroad. Those all have to now be ratified, and we hope there aren't any difficulties there. But now the Connecticut unions, their counterparts up here that run the trains on Metro North and repair the wires and the tracks, et cetera, now they have a target to go for. And they're not going to settle for any contract that's less than those guys on Long Island got. So by raising, the income for the Long Island Railroad employees, the MTA is basically saying, oh, gosh, we're going to have to match this with all of our other unions, and we don't have the money to do that. And you know what that means, more fare increases.
Mm, right. So somebody I feel like it's not just one, I'd say, entity in this scenario that loses. Because, again, there's multiple sides to every story. You've got the people who work for the railroad, obviously. You've got the commuters. And again, then you've got the people who have no connection to the railroad. But again, it pours into somebody else. So even if you take the example of if Metro North shut down today, what that means now for the everyday commuters who don't even touch the railroad and have no idea what that spillover would mean for them, when we're already kind of dealing with headaches on our roadways that are way too congested, the most congested in the country. So yeah, there's a real ripple effect, and I'd say losers in that game if there is a strike. So hopefully that doesn't happen, Jim.
I absolutely agree, and that's why I wanted to keep an eye on this. And this is the canary in the coal mine. What did we learn from somebody else's, mistakes or better practice that we can benefit with ourselves here in Connecticut?
Well, Jim, that's why you are the best at talking transportation, and I so thank you for what you do on a weekly basis in CT Mirror. I'm going to link this week's column to your podcast so people can read it through themselves, and you can find it all on voiceofct.com. Jim, always appreciate you. Thank you so much for your time.
Thanks, Melissa. Have a great day.
Thanks. You too, my friend.